This is Dear Analyst, episode number 84. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about my top three data analytics trends in 2021 and my top three predictions for 2022. It's the start of a new year. Hope you had a great holidays and new year, and can't believe 2022 is already here, all that good stuff. And unlike the NBA, where you can quickly pick out the top dunks and passes and highlights from 2021, the data analytics field is not as clean because we're talking about a profession, about an industry. So this list is by no means exhaustive and is kind of just based on my, you know, reading of the news, seeing what people are talking about on blogs and LinkedIn, YouTube, etc. And I think it's pretty easy to talk about changes and new tools and platforms that are coming up and what they did in 2021. So I'm going to avoid doing that because that doesn't really help anybody. I'd rather just talk about bigger kind of, you know, quote unquote societal moves in the world of data analytics, data science, data engineering. And hopefully this may help you think about how you want to position your career. And I think, I didn't put this in the show notes, but I think there are, I remember seeing some like Forbes or like one of those kind of news sites that post the top job roles or job titles in demand for 2021. And if I can find the link, I'll share it, but I'm pretty sure like, I think, you know, computer science engineering was near the top, but I think data analytics as well was somewhere near the top too. So if you are someone that's looking to get into the field of analytics, I'd say you're going to be in great, you'll have a lot of luck trying to find companies who are looking for data analysts and data engineers who just know how to play with data. So that's another thing to just keep in mind for the upcoming year. All right, so let's recap what happened in 2021. So the first thing is the rise of the analytics engineer job title. I think whenever there are companies hiring for a certain job title that you haven't seen before, that's a good indication that that's a trend that's happening in the workplace. So the data analyst spends their time analyzing data, but the analytics engineer, as I've come to understand it, helps prepare and transform data for these data analysts. And I think the analytics engineer is similar to a data engineer in many ways, but the analytics engineer is a little bit closer to the business, has a more of a pulse on what's going on and how the data is streaming in, how it should be transformed, because they have to be close to the business, because their ultimate customer, if you will, are the data analysts in the organization. So I think the career path is for an analytics engineer to get deeper into an engineering role or go the opposite direction and become a business analyst. And the organization that put this job title or role on the map, I would say, is DBT. And I'd link to if you just Google analytics engineer, I'm sure that the first article will be the one from DBT. And I would take a listen to episode number 58, where I interviewed Krishna Naidu from Canva. And you can see how analysts, he talks about how analysts, data analysts, need to think a little bit more like software engineers and treat their job like software engineers, because that's how the analytics and data analysts at Canva work. They are going into GitHub, committing code. And I think it's really important to see how there's some crossover between the data analytics role and data engineering. There's also a good video I share in the show notes about the analytics engineer, so take a look at that. Number two, another recap from 2021, is the democratization of data sets and visualizations. Now, I hear about this one a lot, and this has been talked about a lot as well in other blog posts and shows and what have you. I want to first talk about a little story, and this was when I was an entry-level analyst. I was working with a like the head of a business analyst group, and this person was tired of getting ad hoc requests and questions about getting customer data sliced and diced different ways. So basically, you've seen this before, the business analyst, data analyst, they're constantly getting asked questions from the C-suite saying, hey, can you tell me how many customers bought on this day? Or can I see the data sliced or filtered by this way? Or can we drill down into this part of the data? So basically getting asked these ad hoc questions, requiring the head of this business analyst group to write all these SQL queries to answer all these one-off questions from the C-suite. So this was not a good use of his time because, you know, he had to work on bigger strategy things for the group. And so what he did was he grabbed an hour at a conference room, gathered everyone that was, you know, his stakeholders, so all these C-suites and other folks were asking him questions. And he just did an hour training on how to use SQL and how to pull data from the data warehouse, what different tables mean, all that good stuff. And guess what happened? As you can expect, there was a lot of eyes that were glazed over. People ended up just kind of being on their laptops and answering emails. And it wasn't a super effective training because, you know, we're talking about C-suite people trying to get into writing SQL queries. And I think as the data visualization tools and platforms that we use today in the enterprise get more easy to use, more user-friendly, the C-suite doesn't even need to know how to run SQL queries anymore. All they need people to do is know how to like filter stuff and sort things. And these charts that we have on all these platforms can easily be manipulated to answer questions about our data. And I think business analysts, data analysts, we no longer are the, you know, gatekeepers or the bottlenecks of the insights from the data where we're being asked to run SQL queries and write SQL queries. Well, that's still going to happen, obviously, once in a while, but I think it's happening less and less, in my opinion. And the data sets are now permissioned and given access to all different parts of the organization, depending on what you need. And I think a lot of the database platforms, the cloud platforms, make this easy so that business organizations can get the data that they need. And I would take a listen to episode number 57 with Nadia Jury of Education Perfect to hear how she had to first partner with the business organization as a data analyst to understand what data they needed, the business needed, before they started like putting together the data in the data warehouse. So democratization, very buzzy keyword these days with the data world, but I think given the tools we have now, it's becoming more and more prevalent and will probably continue into 2022 and the many years beyond. So finally, the third recap or trend from 2021, and you cannot talk about this doing a recap of 2021 or even 2020 for that matter, is low-code and no-code tools. The data analysts, business analysts, we can now stitch together our own mini data pipelines in our organization without needing a full-on data engineer's help. And like I mentioned before, these tools have led to the democratization of data from above. And I think this trend has actually started outside of the data analytics world. I think we started seeing many SaaS tools in the last year to open up to the rest of the organization. What I mean by that is you have design tools, you have customer support tools that are not meant to be used just by the customer support or the marketing or design teams. You now see data from the customer support team being shared with marketing teams, being shared with engineering teams, because it just helps the other teams better understand what's going on with different parts of the business. So data is already kind of being shared across the organization and being democratized with these other SaaS tools. And that leaks over obviously into the data world where you have, you know, business automation tools that allow you to quickly sync data from one tool to the next. And there's just so much more freedom for analysts, citizen analysts, as you can say, to put together these tools in a way that helps their organization. And this leads to that democratization I just talked about. Again, I think it's also a good sign when you see job titles that have no code or low code in them, just further proves and shows that the trend is happening. So for instance, right now there is a consultant role at Deloitte, which is just called low code, no code consultant in New York. And this person will be working on a team providing low code, no code platform implementation and support services to clients. So that just shows that companies are adopting low-code, no-code platforms, and Deloitte obviously sees a need to hire folks who understand these platforms so that they can better serve their clients. I still think Excel is the number one low-code tool, in my opinion, and it just was never branded as such. So if you want to take a listen to episode number 21, I talk about no-code solutions in Excel, and I also link to a video where I spoke at the no-code conference in 2019, where I spoke about the same subject, which is building no-code applications using spreadsheets. Okay, now onto the juicy stuff. Predictions for 2022. It's already 2022, but let's go on with what I think will happen this year. And of course, I could be completely wrong, probably will be wrong, but always fun to make predictions and figure out why you went wrong. First one. Number one is Python and R will become required languages in the data analysis tool belt. And I know you're thinking, wait, I thought only data scientists need to know Python and R. And there's a couple of reasons why I think data analysts need to know Python and R. I think one, just given the amount of data being stored in data warehouses now, Excel is not the best tool to analyze super large data sets. SQL, yeah, you could argue is, but then you're still just summarizing the data and pulling data, but to analyze it, I still think Python and R are the best tools right now for analyzing this large sets of data for analysts. And you may be thinking, well, again, I thought data scientists only need to know Python and R. I think the roles and responsibilities between data analysts, data engineers, data scientists are constantly shifting. And I think by knowing Python and R, you're just providing more value to your enterprise or organization. And the third thing is, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, you started seeing a lot of these Excel and SQL training programs. I mean, I have my own from like 10 years ago now. And it was a way for companies to quickly get their employees trained up on how to use Excel and SQL. In the last few years, you started seeing way more and more these data scientist boot camps where the main thing is to learn Python, to learn R, to learn machine learning, a little bit of AI. And as more and more universities are providing these certificates or boot camps to train potential students, it just shows that this is a very in-demand role and also very in-demand skills, that those being Python and R as required languages. In episode number 65, I talk with Katie Donovan, who took a data science bootcamp class at Columbia University School of Engineering. And if you just Google like data scientist certificate, I'm sure you'll find many top tier universities and third party bootcamps just offering this kind of certificate or training program. More so than I would say than Excel and SQL. I'm not saying that Excel and SQL are not taught at these programs, but I think there's been a bigger focus on Python and R because of the prevalence of these tools in different organizations. So it feels like, in my opinion, Python and R are kind of like what Excel and SQL were like 20 years ago. Not replacing, so to speak, but kind of getting they're kind of getting that limelight. They're kind of getting the spotlight right now as the hot new tools and languages to learn, frameworks to learn. So it's another sign that these are the languages and skills that companies are looking for, because all the universities are offering them to students to make some money, obviously. So Python and R, always good tools to learn and put in your tool belt as an analyst. Number two, top prediction for 2022 is domain-specific machine learning tools. I think another prediction without mentioning machine learning would also not be complete. So this is kind of in line with the no-code trend, just less manual work required for massaging data sets to pull out the insights that analysts need for making predictions. And I think machine learning tools will start falling in the hands of regular analysts who can just build and run models off of data sets without having to literally write any code at all. So, you know, you're not going to have to, you know, create notebooks to run your different code. And there are many big cloud companies that are offering these low-code machine learning platforms already to business analysts as they see the need for this rising in different organizations. And I think to kind of give an example of what this could be is, imagine that, you know, you work in HR and there might be a machine learning model that's specific just to HR type of data. There might be a machine learning application specific just to the, you know, customer relationship management domain. And maybe this can even get application specific. Let's say your company, like many company, uses Salesforce to manage company data, customer and pipeline data. There might be a machine learning application, there probably already is for that matter, that focuses just on Salesforce data and getting insights and meaning out of your Salesforce data, more so than what Salesforce offers, you know, on its own platform. Maybe that machine learning platform incorporates Salesforce data with, you know, your customer support data, product usage data, and it comes up with really interesting insights that any analyst can just plug and play and see what the results are. To bring this analogy back to you all who are probably still using Excel and Google Sheets, an example of this trend, I think, this is kind of a stretch, but in Google Sheets, in the bottom right-hand corner, you probably have seen the explore-like word. And that's a tab where if you click on the explore tab, all you need to do is all this feature does is it takes your data and just tries to find unique insights using charts and visualizations. And if you think about it, that's kind of like a little machine learning model working behind the scenes, trying to find the interesting things about your data that wouldn't require you to build a chart yourself. And I think that Explore tab in Google Sheets could just get much more advanced as it understands the shape and type and amount of data you're feeding it to recommend interesting visualizations that take all the manual work out of trying to figure out what the insights are and what the decision is or needs to be made with that data. So machine learning tools, big fan of them, probably get more domain and industry specific this year, and we'll see what all the big cloud companies do with those tools. And the third prediction, and this is not really a prediction, but more of kind of, I guess, a statement, I guess you could say, is Excel will still remain the tool to do everything. You probably saw this one coming. No matter what artificial intelligence, machine learning, cloud computing predictions people have, and I know there's a lot, there's this most dominant tool used across business lines will still be Excel. And the caveat here is, like, if you're a, you know, snazzy new startup coming out of Y Combinator, you probably don't have an Office 365 license and you're probably sticking to a free tool like Google Sheets or other tools that give you a quick way to analyze your data that are free. But if you do a survey of the majority of businesses around the world, Excel will still be the main tool that all entry-level analysts up to the CEOs will use to make charts and tweak models and to analyze their data. There's just no way getting around that, and don't foresee this changing in 2022 or in 2042. Excel will constantly innovate as well to meet the needs of the enterprise, so behooves you to learn Excel no matter what. I think many SaaS tools many people argue that there are SaaS tools that you should be using instead of Excel to do things like, you know, looking at your HR data, organizing an event, managing the out of office schedule for your business. But unfortunately, people in an organization just grab whatever tool they're familiar with, and that ends up being Excel. And I would take a look at this article I linked to from Packy M called Excel Never Dies. This article was mentioned linked to rather in many different communities last year in 2021. So definitely gives you a nice kind of highlight and overview of why Excel will never die. So take a look and read through that. That wraps up the trends I saw from 2021, predictions from 2022. There's a lot more that can happen this year. There's a lot more that happened last year, but these are just three that I think were worth calling out. And I want to also give a quick shout out to another episode from another podcast I listened to. Haven't done one of these in some time. Freakonomics episode number 483. The episode is called What's Wrong with Shortcuts. When I first saw this episode in my podcast player, I was like, ooh, this sounds like it's about keyboard shortcuts or Excel keyboard shortcuts. And you know, my interest was automatically piqued by the kind of clickbaity title, if you will. But this podcast episode was really interesting. They interviewed Marcus du Sautoy. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. He wrote this book called Thinking Better, The Art of the Shortcut in Math and Life. And around minute 20, they're talking about different categories of people who think about shortcuts. So category one are people who... So I guess backing up, the book is about how we can apply mathematics to life, to take shortcuts. You know, this is everything from figuring out the shortcut to, or figure out the best credit card to buy to optimize credit card points, all the way to figuring out the best websites to find, you know, the next pair of rain boots to buy or snow boots. So it's just like these simple shortcuts that, you know, help us optimize everything in life. And without these shortcuts, you'd just be spending a lot more manual time, manual work, trying to figure something out. That's all it is. And around minute 20, they talk about different categories of people, where category one is the type of person who is using math, using science to come up with these shortcuts for their own lives. And I think they also talk about how laziness is one of the best qualities about people, because lazy people, especially people that are in category one, will try to come up with shortcuts to get rid of the manual work in their lives because by the fact that very nature that they are lazy, which I think is an interesting observation. So you have category one. These are folks who are coming up with shortcuts and using math and science to build these shortcuts in their lives. Category two are people who, I think, I might be getting this wrong now, but I think category two are people who are not creating shortcuts, but are open to using shortcuts and may come up with their shortcuts once in a while, but for the most part are just using other people's shortcuts and trying to optimize their lives and learning math and science to help themselves automate certain things. And then category three are those who are not actively creating their own shortcuts with math and science, and once in a while will follow shortcuts from other folks and use the shortcuts from other people. But they are typically, I think, still using like the long manual ways of doing things. So for instance, I think I remember hearing about a friend's grandmother who refuses to use the internet, which they mentioned this episode is the biggest shortcut in the history of like the world. Instead of using the internet, the grandmother refuses to use the internet and gives directions to people on how to get to her house, I think in Greece. And since she can't use the internet, she refuses to use Google Maps. So instead, what she does is whenever people are coming to visit, she gives like handwritten or literally speaks the directions on how to get to her house, you know, taking left turns and right turns. And this is an example of, I think, a category three person who is, you know, I guess you could say stuck in their old ways, but refuses to use shortcuts to optimize their life and still uses the old kind of manual ways of doing things. And the book is all about how people can jump, so to speak, from category three up to category two, up through category one. And I think shortcuts, I think they mentioned this in the episode as well, is once you discover the shortcut, just like when you've discovered the keyboard shortcut in Excel or Google Sheets to do something, you can't go back to the old way of doing things because of how much time and how much automation you can save or gain rather from using that shortcut. And I think that's what the impetus for this this book is to show that like once people learn these shortcuts, there's just no kind of turning back, if you will, to the old way of doing things. So yeah, I'll listen around minute 20 and then just listen to the rest of the episode about this book. Now I kind of want to read it and for myself and learn about how there's more of a focus of math and science to be used in our lives to find these shortcuts that make our lives even better. And I mean, I think you can equate this to a lot of what I've talked about in my last few episodes, where you have people, I mean, this is, you know, mostly engineers, developers who are thinking of ways to automate and simplify and streamline different parts of their life because they have the tools and skills to write code that can do this kind of stuff. So I'm not saying everyone should just go off and be a computer scientist or computer engineer, but I think that way of thinking of seeing a problem, seeing how can I automate something and developing and using math and science as a way to develop a shortcut to automate that aspect of your life is a really important skill. And hopefully more and more people will think like that and impart their wisdom on the rest of society. Okay, that wraps it up for this episode, and I will talk to you next time.